I won't ask a third time. Leave.
Don't sound like you're asking at all, mister.
The smaller of the three stepped forward.
We weren't doing nothing, and this ain't your store anyway. You got no right to ask us to leave.
That's my vehicle you're poking around. Colt didn't want to shoot them. The gunfire would terrify everyone inside the restaurant and call a ton of unwanted attention. Who knew what the sound of a shootout would bring out of the woodwork? He made a show of cocking the gun. You don't want to die over a puffed-up ego. Leave, and I won't put a bullet in your head. The quiet one reached into his pocket. Colt took aim on his chest. As the kid removed his hand, a knife blade caught the moonlight. Colt groaned to himself. What is it with me and knives lately? The blade upped the odds of having to shoot. It was still the worst option. He pointed at the knife with his gun. You know how to use that thing, or just showing off? The kid made a swiping motion with the blade. Guess that's a yes. Colt widened his stance and unlocked his knees. If only he had Larkin to back him up. All three young men fanned out, surrounding Colt in a half circle. He had a choice to make. Use the gun and end this now, or do it the hard way. Shooting them meant at least three bullets, six if he didn't want to take a chance. It would just about run him dry. It would also mean they had to leave as soon as possible. No sleeping in, no calm and orderly breakfast before hitting the road, no chance to wash some of the grime off. Not that hygiene should come above his own safety, but Colt was sick of being on the defensive, sick of always being one step behind. After Jarvis, he wanted a break. The kid with the knife rushed him as he thought it over. A quick jab and Colt parried, dancing back like a boxer. Another stepped forward and swung. Thanks to the kid's size, he telegraphed everything from the angle of the blow to the force of the impact. Colt dodged again, and the kid stumbled as his fist caught nothing but air. Heat rose off the two who missed, their anger reflected in the bunch of their shoulders and the grimaces on their thick, blocky faces. Brothers, maybe. Last chance, boys. Leave now and you won't get hurt. The one in the middle stood watching.
You ain't gonna shoot us, or you'd have done it already. I bet there ain't any bullets in that gun.
So much for the easy way. Colt unslung the rifle and brought it into position. There's plenty in this one. He flicked the safety to single rounds and aimed. Now get out of here. The two on his flanks hesitated and turned to the boy in the middle. He could have been the oldest or the de facto leader or just the biggest bully. Colt didn't care. If he gave in, the others would too. Come on, leave. Out of the punk's waistband came a tiny revolver, a .22 or a snub-nose .38, a piece with accuracy for shit and a kick a kid couldn't control. I'll drop you before you even take a shot.
Come on, Sammy, it ain't worth it.
The kid brought the gun up with one hand, holding it sideways like idiots did on TV. He's right. You don't have to do this. Just walk away. Sammy's thick brow shielded his eyes as he struggled with the decision. Colt kept the rifle aimed at his chest. At this range, the bullet would sail through the kid's chest like a rock through water, but a hit to the heart would still kill. His finger rested light and easy on the trigger. The kid stepped back. Colt exhaled. Maybe this would end well after all. As the kid retreated another step, a metallic clink and slide echoed behind Colt. The restaurant's rear door was opening. Shit.
Hey, Colt, you out here? It's my turn to stand watch.
The kid with the gun panicked, backpedaling to the dark as he took aim on the rear of the building.
Get back inside,
Colt shouted, but he knew it was all over. He aimed at the kid's chest and fired, but it was too late. The revolver discharged. The booming echo of the shot bounced off of the metal dumpster and carried into the night. The kid on the left screamed. The kid on the right turned and ran. Sammy still stood, head bent to inspect the hole in his chest.
You shot me. You bastard.
He brought the gun back up, but Colt fired before he had a chance. This time, he ended it with a shot to the head. Sammy crumpled to the ground. The one still standing rushed up, falling to his knees at the sight.
No! Sammy, no!
He reached for the body, hands diving into the thickening blood. He turned to look at Colt.
You didn't have to shoot him.
Yes, I did.
He's my brother! You shot my brother!
Your brother tried to kill me. Even in the moonlight, Colt could see the snot and tears streaming down the boy's face.
He was backing up! He was gonna leave!
I gave him plenty of chances. The door to the restaurant banged open again.
What's going on? Doug, are you... Oh, no.
Melody rushed up, but Doug grabbed her by the waist and held her back.
We have to help him!
It's too late. He's dead.
Colt never took his eyes off Sammy's brother. The kid was still a threat, and the gun his brother used was a foot away.
Get the gun, will you, Doug?
Doug let his sister go and took a step forward, but the kid lunged for it. Colt didn't hesitate. He put two quick rounds in the space between his eyes. He died before he hit the ground. This time, Melody didn't scream. She fainted instead.
Day 32. Chapter 13. Melody. Chili's, Springfield, Oregon. 6 a.m. The cup of coffee in her hand did nothing to stop the shaking. Flashbacks of her fight with Captain Ferguson flashed before her eyes. His hands on her body. The menacing look in his eyes. What he intended to do. She remembered the way his body jerked with each bullet. How he fell to the ground with life still in his eyes. She'd stood up and hobbled away from the first and only man she'd killed and carried on. The horror of that moment would always stay with her. But it was nothing compared to this. She glanced up at Colt, sacked out on a makeshift bed across the room. The man shot a pair of kids in cold blood, and he slept like he'd just had a boring day at the office. It turned her stomach. Her brother eased into the chair beside her. How are you? She caught him a glance. Ouch. That good, huh? He sighed and scooted his chair a bit closer. Don't be so hard on Colt. He did what he had to do. No, he didn't. Shooting that kid wasn't necessary. He could have taken the gun from him and let him go. You weren't there, Melody. Not at first. And you were? She eyed her brother. He looked like he'd been on a 3-day bender. Black circles clung beneath his eyes, and his skin took on a sallow tone. You didn't see the whole thing. He rubbed his eyes as if to rid himself of the memory. You need to lay off Colt. Why? Doug waited until she met his eyes. Because it was my fault. I'm the reason those two kids are dead. What? Melody couldn't keep her voice low. I didn't see you with a gun in your hand. You're not the one who shot first. His jaw ticked as he forced out the words. I came outside like an idiot, banging the door open and calling out to Colt. Doug swallowed hard. I spooked the kid with the gun. He fired into the dark. The bullet hit a foot from my head and blasted concrete dust all over me. Colt was protecting me. Melody glanced back at Colt. Her voice must have carried because he wasn't sleeping anymore. He sat on the edge of the bed, watching her. She turned back to her brother. I don't believe you. It's true. If he hadn't shot the first kid, then who knows what would have happened. I could be dead. So could Colt. He did the right thing. Melody pursed her lips. What about the second one? I was there for it. You could have disarmed him. Not if he got to the gun first. Doug reached out and took Melody by the arms. His fingers dug in, but didn't hurt. The world is different now, Mel. You should understand that. She shook him off. I do. Not well enough. Melody snorted and turned away. On some level, her brother had a point. But she couldn't shake the feeling that Colt had a choice and he opted for the wrong one. Taking a person's life should be the absolute last resort. It wasn't like choosing which socks to put on, or whether to bike or drive to work. She glanced up at Colt. He still sat in the same spot, his expression stoic and unreadable. Was this the way the world worked now? take someone's life before they take yours? Shoot first and don't bother to ask questions? If they had never taken Colt and Danny in, she would still be in Eugene, in her own house, sleeping in her own bed. Not dirty and tired and living like a criminal. A yip sounded from a booth a few tables away, and Melody turned. Will and Lottie were playing tug with a dish towel. Lottie. Even if she'd stayed in Eugene, she wouldn't have been safe. At some point, a militia member would have found Lottie. And then what would have happened to her? Lottie would be dead. Melody would have been rounded up. If the bedroom they threw her into was anything to go by, she'd have been forced into unspeakable things sooner or later anyway. Melody rubbed at her face. It was all so unreal. Maybe Doug was right. Maybe she had to accept that killing was a fact of life now, like peeing behind a bush, or in a pit dug in the ground, or using gray water to rinse the grime from her hair. She wanted to believe otherwise, but the more she thought about it, the more unsure she became of everything. The fate of Oregon, the Pacific Northwest, all of America. Was this same scene playing out all across the country? Were other ordinary people struggling with who to let live and who to kill? How to eat and sleep and not die? Melody stood up and headed over to Colt. She stopped a few feet away and eased into a chair. He regarded her with calm interest. She tugged at the corner of her shirt. I'm sorry I gave you a hard time earlier. I know you were protecting us. He nodded, but didn't speak. You have so much more experience with taking another person's life. I guess I'm just having a hard time coming to terms with it.
It never gets any easier.
It doesn't? Colt ran a hand over his head and pinched the back of his neck.
The day ending another person's life becomes easy is the day I put a bullet in my own skull. It doesn't matter if I've been trained to pull the trigger, Melody. I'm still human. I still feel it.
He put his fist over his heart.
Right here.
Then why do it?
Because I want to keep living. It's as simple as that.
Colt stood up with a grimace and headed toward the kitchen. Melody watched him walk away.
That man has put his life on the line for you more times than I can count. I'm not sure questioning his humanity is the right way to say thank you.
Larkin stopped beside her chair and offered his hand. She took it with a frown and stood up. That's not what I was doing.
When you ask a former SEAL why he kills people, that's exactly what you're doing.
Melody bristled. I wasn't questioning his military service.
He killed those young men last night, for the same reason he killed insurgents on active duty. To protect the freedom everyone in this country takes for granted. Just now it's on a more localized scale.
That doesn't mean I have to like it.
I sure as hell hope not.
Melody stared up at Larkin. He'd always been so quick to lighten the mood or change the subject before. But he was all grim stares and hard lips now. She didn't want to fight with him or Colt. After a moment, she tried to smile, but her lips wouldn't cooperate. Is it too much to ask for an uneventful day? Larkin relaxed, and his whole face changed. The hard angles were gone.
You can always ask. Whether it'll happen, that's above my pay grade.
He gave her shoulder a squeeze as he walked away. Melody exhaled, and the weight of the night before settled on her shoulders. She didn't know if she would ever get used to this new way of living. Or if she would struggle with every heartbreaking decision and terrible choice. She stood alone in the little corner of the restaurant, thinking about the future and her place in it until Will called out.
Melody, come quick! You'll never believe what they're doing with the Humvee!
She smiled at his enthusiasm and followed his bounding form toward the rear of the restaurant and the scene of last night's horrible nightmare. Part of her wished she could be as innocent and naive as Will. But she wondered, how long would she survive before reality snuffed her out?
Chapter 14 Danny Chili's, Springfield, Oregon, 7 a.m.
That thing will really run on nasty oil?
Colt shrugged as the used fryer oil slugged into the gas tank of the Humvee. Not forever. It'll get us a couple hundred miles, though. Before the filters clog. We might make it all the way to Tahoe.
Why not keep searching for diesel?
We've canvassed at least a mile in every direction. We're in the middle of a residential area. There aren't any trucks to siphon. Larkin set down the empty jug and picked up the next one while Colt held the funnel ready. If we find some diesel on the road, we can mix it. That'll buy us more time before everything gums up and quits.
I thought you could run a diesel on vegetable oil no problem.
Doug walked out of the restaurant carrying an armful of water bottles.
One of the firefighters I used to work with was always talking about how he wanted to drive around smelling like a French fry.
Colt answered without turning around. The engine can handle it, but the intake valves and the filters can't. To run unfiltered oil like this, the Humvee needs an adapter kit we don't have. Like I said, it'll run, just not forever. Danny watched Colt and Larkin pour the rest of the used oil into the tank in silence. They couldn't leave without another vehicle. Not if they wanted to take the food from the restaurant, the water, and the empty containers for fuel. She glanced behind her at the street in the early morning light. After Colt's run-in the night before, the sooner they hit the road, the better. She pulled the rifle off her shoulder and walked up to Colt. I'm gonna scout for a car. He stood up and wiped his hands on a rag.
Are you sure? Larkin and I can handle it.
I'm going crazy standing around. Let me do it. After a moment, Colt nodded.
All right. But as soon as you see something promising, come back and let us know.
She nodded and headed toward the road without another word. Melody and Will stood off to the side, watching Colt and Larkin finish up. Black circles cast deep shadows under Melody's eyes, and Danny wondered if she'd come to terms with what happened in the parking lot. Danny didn't doubt the necessity of Colt's actions. If he believed those kids were a threat, then he should have shot them. Their world wasn't an insulated, comfortable bubble anymore. It was rough and dirty and meaner than all get out. She used to wish her life was like Melody's. A nice house, plenty of food in the fridge, a little dog to keep her company. But now she was almost thankful for her mother. If she hadn't grown up part scavenger, part orphan, she would never be able to make the hard choices now. She would be too much like Melody. When confronted with her own safety, Melody could make the tough choices. But when someone else held the power, she couldn't accept the same outcome. Danny hoped the woman would come around. She left the restaurant on the corner behind and darted across the road. The house across the street appeared vacant, with foot-tall weeds in the front yard and a broken front step. Danny skirted the house, hugging the siding as she tucked in between a bush and the exterior wall. The street turned residential fast, with nothing but houses as far as she could see. One of them would have a car. Taking off for the next house, she paused at the edge of the driveway. A single car detached garage lurked in the back corner of the lot. Danny hustled toward it, ever mindful of her exposed position. She took cover behind the edge of the structure and searched for a window. Nothing. If she wanted inside, she would have to open the door. She glanced up. The house appeared dark and quiet, but not obviously empty. No trash strewn about. No broken window or porch swing. To open the garage door, she would have her back to the windows. Too risky. She pushed on, passing four or five more houses without success. At the next block, another garage caught her eye. The house it accompanied suffered more than the rest. Peeling paint, cracked concrete, a basketball hoop without a net. Danny eased around the rear of the building, skirting a knocked-over trash can and pile of decomposing garbage. The air hung thick around her like a wet wool blanket, and she covered her nose against the stench. At least the rain held off. She ducked low, head barely clearing a row of bushes, and ran for the garage. The door was shut, and Danny groaned in frustration. What were the chances a car still sat on a driveway in this neighborhood? From the looks of it, slim to none. The thugs who took on Colt the night before didn't seem the type to discriminate between houses and restaurants. If something of value remained on this street after the power went out, it was long gone now. She sucked in a breath. I'll have to risk it. Danny crouched low against the side of the garage and assessed the danger. Three windows on the back of the house, all dark and apparently empty. Line of sight from the garage door to the street and the house opposite. The wood fence running along the driveway obscured her approach from the house next door, but that didn't bring her much comfort. I'll be a sitting duck. With a deep breath, she pushed the rifle on her back and went for it. Darting to the door, she grabbed the black-painted metal handle and pulled. Paint flecked off in her hand, but the door only creaked in protest. She crouched low and tried again, putting her legs and back into the effort. The ancient wood groaned and shook and rose about a half an inch before Danny lost her grip. She staggered back and gripped her jeans above the knees. Air sawed in and out of her lungs. One more try. That's all she would allow herself. Danny sucked in a breath, clenched her abs, and heaved. The door wobbled, rose an inch or two, and threatened to fall. But Danny refused to let go. Yanking with all her strength, she shoved the door up high enough to grab the bottom before it fell. With her shoulders and back joining the effort, the lumbering beast finally lifted. As it rocked back into place above her head, Danny sagged to her knees. Her lungs burned, her legs ached, but her eyes widened with hope. The grill of a rusty old pickup sat a foot from her face. She lurched upright and stumbled forward, gripping the dusty front fender for support as she eased around the vehicle. It hadn't been driven in weeks, maybe months. A thin layer of dust and grime covered every inch. Danny wiped the crud off the dashboard with her sleeve. All dials, no computers. Had to be way older than her, maybe older than Colt. She slid over and poked around the driver's seat. No seatbelt. No keys. It didn't matter. Lack of keys wasn't much of an obstacle. She had to get the thing started. No way was she leaving it here for someone else to find while she ran back to get Colt or Larkin. She clambered out and glanced around the garage. Please be here, please. All she needed was a tool chest. Dodging cardboard boxes and piles of frayed towels, she found a cabinet in the back and tugged it open. She dug through the tools inside, shoving aside pliers and hammers, until she found what she needed. A flathead screwdriver. Danny almost whooped, but managed to keep quiet. She rushed back to the truck and climbed into the driver's seat. With a good dose of brute force, Danny shoved the edge of the screwdriver under the plastic housing around the ignition and worked it back and forth. The housing popped off, exposing the inner gears. She jabbed the screwdriver into the hole in the center and twisted with all her might. Come on, come on. The truck turned over, but wouldn't start. She pumped the gas and tried again. Yes! It coughed and sputtered as it rumbled to life. Danny put the truck in drive and eased out of the garage. Screw waiting for Colt and Larkin. She could get them a car all on her own. With a grin on her face, Danny pulled out onto the road. She wasn't the most talented driver, but she'd been behind the wheel more times than she could count, thanks to her mom's benders. The car theft came courtesy of one boy who thought they could bond over a life of crime. Never had she thought it would come in handy until now. Danny hit the gas, and the truck rumbled down the block, across the street, and into the parking lot at Chili's. Meandering over the speed bumps, she pulled the truck in at an angle next to the Humvee and killed the engine. Colt lowered his rifle as she opened the driver's side door. Danny's smile faltered as she hopped out. "What's wrong?"
"I almost shot you."
"I found us a vehicle." Colt's frown deepened.
"You aren't old enough to drive."
"Pfft, says who? I've been driving since I was 13.
"Parking skills need some work."
Larkin walked around the truck from the other side.
"But good job, kid. Where'd you find it?"
"In a garage a few blocks from here. It was the only vehicle around." Colt brushed past her and climbed halfway inside.
"Where are the keys?"
Danny shrugged. "I don't know. I just popped the ignition. Works in beaters like this all the time." Larkin raised an eyebrow but said nothing. Colt poked around the seats before climbing back down.
"You should have stuck to the plan and waited for us."
"I didn't want to take the time. Besides, I never would have gotten the garage door back down. Someone else could have stolen it. It was the right call." Danny didn't know why Colt was acting like this. She thought he'd be happy. Proud, even. At last, he exhaled.
"All right. Let's pack up. We need to hit the road."
Chapter 15. Danny. Highway 58, Northwest California, 4 p.m. At 15 years old, Danny had finally left the state of Oregon. So far, California looked a heck of a lot like her home state. Tons of trees, mountains that swooped and swelled, curvy two-lane roads. It wasn't the glamorous escape she saw on TV. It wouldn't ever be that again. According to Larkin, the cities were in chaos. Sacramento had been barricaded and left to burn. San Francisco was worse. There would be nothing left of Hollywood. She leaned forward in the Humvee and squinted. Colt drove the pickup in front, with Harvey, Gloria, and Will crammed in the bench seat beside him. Danny sat in the front of the Humvee, with Larkin behind the wheel, and Melody, Doug, and Lottie crammed in the back, along with a couple jerry cans for fuel and all the weapons. Thanks to the pickup bed, they were able to bring the salvageable restaurant food and water, along with a ton of other useful items. Everything from dish towels to silverware. The only problem was the Humvee's filters. Thanks to the vegetable oil, the vehicle clunked and sputtered, and the gap between them and Colt widened throughout the afternoon. Now, Colt cruised about a half a mile ahead. They caught glimpses of him now and then, but the gap made Danny uneasy. Larkin didn't seem to mind. She stared at the trees ahead. "How far are we from Tahoe?"
"About 150 miles. Should be coming up on Lake Elmanor soon."
Danny glanced at Larkin. "Will we make it?" He sat up in his seat and examined the dashboard.
"Maybe."
"Should we stop and let the Humvee cool down?"
"No. I'm afraid if we kill the engine, it won't start up again. We'll have to drive until it gives out."
"Great." Danny turned back to the window. Were road trips always like this? Miles and miles of never-ending forest, with nothing to do but stare out the window. She propped her chin on her hand, and her gaze wandered. She blinked. The first time she only caught a glimpse and figured she must be imagining things. The second time, she bolted upright and squinted into the trees.
"There's another road, just through the trees."
Larkin shrugged.
"Probably a logging road."
"I don't think so. There's a car on it. It's keeping up with us."
"You're seeing things. Probably just a reflection off the mirror."
Danny shook her head. "I know what I saw. There's a car over there. Silver or gray. It's tailing us, Larkin." He glanced over but didn't take his eyes off the road long enough to confirm her suspicions.
"Keep watching. Tell me what type of car and what they're doing."
She spun on him. "I can't see anything but a blur. We need to warn Colt." Larkin's lips thinned into a line.
If someone's tailing us, then it's too late. Anything I do will put whoever's over there on notice.
So?
Right now, they're just watching. If they know we're onto them, it could escalate fast.
Danny slumped back in the seat. So you're going to do nothing? Colt's in a beat-up old truck. At least we're protected.
Larkin snorted. No, we're not. This isn't an up-armored Humvee, Danny. It's regular issue.
What do you mean?
It's a metal can on wheels. We have no protection.
Danny swallowed. All this time, she thought they were basically driving a tank that could go through anything. Bullets, fire, a throng of angry people. Turned out she was wrong.
Melody scooted forward and popped her head between the front seats.
Why does the army drive this thing if it isn't protected?
Larkin puffed out his cheeks as he exhaled. A million reasons. Budget, mostly. But time to produce, weight to transport, ease of use, too. Long story short, we're no better off than Colt and Harvey up there. Maybe a fair bit worse.
Melody retreated into the back, and Danny turned her attention to the tree line. The false sense of security she'd held onto for the entire drive disappeared. Unease and fear took its place. She squinted, hoping to catch a glimpse of the foreign car. Nothing. Settling into a scrunched-up ball with her knees on the seat, she kept her face an inch from the window. After another 30 miles of nothing, she gave up. Whoever I saw is gone. Either the road curved away from the highway, or they left.
Good, because I've got to take a leak.
Larkin hit the horn 3 times and slowed the Humvee. He pulled it over into the grassy shoulder and put it in park.
Keep it running, will you?
Danny nodded as Larkin hopped out.
I've got to stretch my legs.
Doug clambered out onto the edge of the road. Lottie needs to go too. Melody thrust the little dog out the open door, and Doug took her before helping his sister. Danny stayed inside. She focused on the road up ahead. Colt should be turning around. He had to hear the horn. He wouldn't leave them behind.
Come on, Lottie. I know you need to go.
Melody's voice carried through the open doors, but Danny tuned her out.
Where is Colt?
She stood up and leaned across the driver's seat. Can any of you see the pickup? Larkin traipsed out of the tree line and batted at the overgrown weeds. He stopped on the edge of the road.
Not yet, but I hear it, don't you?
Danny couldn't hear anything over the rumbling, choking engine of the Humvee.
Is he coming?
Something about the entire situation put Danny on edge. She needed to see Colt, alive and well, driving the pickup truck right back their way.
Anything.
Larkin stepped closer to the road.
Not yet.
He motioned to the others.
Get back in. We need to hurry in case he didn't hear us.
As Melody hoisted herself up into the back, the first glint of sunshine on paint caught Danny's eye. The pickup truck bounced into sight, foreheads illuminated by the afternoon sun. She exhaled in relief. They were okay. They were coming back.
Larkin waved once to let them know they were safe and heading out.
Colt slowed the pickup. He waved in response and swung in a wide arc, turning the truck around. As Doug eased into the back, Larkin swung the driver's side door shut. He fell inside with a smile.
Let's see if we can keep up this time, shall we?
He punched the gas pedal and the Humvee lurched forward. They trailed Colt's pickup by about 100 yards. As the truck rounded the corner in front of them, it disappeared behind the trees. Larkin cranked the wheel, following Colt as best he could. Danny eased forward in the seat, the momentary reprieve of seeing Colt now gone. The Humvee grumbled around the corner, and the trees thinned. 200 yards ahead, another road crossed the highway. Colt barreled along toward it, the pickup chugging along, despite the 4 passengers and gear in the back. Larkin cursed under his breath and pumped the gas pedal. They slipped further behind.
Can't you make it go any faster?
Nope. This is it. And we're getting slower.
He focused on the dash,
as Danny turned back to the road just as the sun hit chrome.
Larkin!
She jabbed a finger toward the trees.
The other car! It's back!
Where?
The cross street, and coming fast!
Larkin hit the horn.
Beep, 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 beep!
Colt's brake lights lit up. Danny shook her head.
He can't stop in the intersection. He's got to stop now.
Larkin pressed down on the horn again, holding it on as he pushed the Humvee to catch up. It wasn't enough. The silver car that had tailed them for miles burst into the clearing. Everything slowed. The breeze, the tires chewing up asphalt, the sleek silver muscle car as it headed straight for the pickup. Colt cranked the wheel. The muscle car screeched. Too little, too late. The car entered the intersection from the right, while Colt banked hard to the left. The front fender of the car hit the truck smack in the middle. Metal crumpled. Backpacks and water bottles flew into the air. The truck's tires came off the ground. But the car didn't stop. It drove on like a battering ram, upending the pickup and sending it rolling and flipping over the ground again and again. Every time the wheels hit, the truck bounced up and over, flip after flip. Danny stared in horror. Crumpled hunks of metal and food flew off in every direction. A jug of water, a can of apples, the tailgate. The trees finally stopped the truck's relentless roll. It slammed into a stand of evergreens with a sickening crunch and dropped to the ground. Dust plumed around it. The car sat in the middle of the intersection, hood crumpled, but otherwise intact. Danny couldn't breathe. Could anyone survive a crash like that? Larkin threw the Humvee in park and jumped out, rifle in his hands.
Check the truck. I'm searching the road.
Danny ran after him, her heart hammering like a death toll in her head.
Chapter 16. Colt. Highway 58, Northwest California, 5 p.m.
How much longer?
Will leaned over his grandfather's lap to look out the window.
We've been driving in trees for hours.
Harvey smiled.
We're in California, so probably another 3 or 4.
Gloria twisted around in the seat next to Colt.
Will the Humvee make it? They keep falling behind.
Colt glanced up in the rearview mirror.
I hope so.
The last time Larkin pulled over, Colt almost hadn't heard the horn. If they drifted too far apart, he might not know when the Humvee stalled. He eased his foot off the gas and let Larkin catch up.
There's gotta be a place near here for gas. We're coming up on some towns, aren't we?
Harvey nodded.
Should be soon. We're on the downward slope toward Lake Almanor now. There's a small town there, tourist-type place.
We haven't been there in 20 years. Who knows what it's like now?
Colt glanced at Gloria. If that was true, they might as well be heading into the area blind. 20 years was a long time in Northern California. Whole towns could transform from sleepy little hideouts to destination spots. Colt had lived in Sacramento long enough to see it happen to nearby places like Solvang and Auburn. There was no telling what Lake Almanor and the towns around it were like now. They needed to be cautious. He glanced at the fuel gauge. It had been stuck on a quarter tank for way too long. Pretty soon, it wouldn't matter what kind of town they came across. He would need to siphon some gas. Colt puffed up his chest and stretched. Riding four across a bench seat didn't give him much room for comfort. Gloria almost sat in his lap, and poor Will perched on the front of the seat like a bird on a wire. It didn't even have seat belts.
As soon as we see some signs of life, we'll need to keep an eye out for gas. Think abandoned cars, farm equipment, motorcycles, anything with a gas tank that we can siphon. And what about the Humvee? If it's still running, then diesel or vegetable oil.
Colt rubbed at his face and fought off the exhaustion. After his run-in with the punks the night before, he'd barely slept.
If you need me to drive, I can take a shift.
Colt turned to thank Harvey when the horn from the Humvee made him pause.
The horn sounded again, and a burst of chrome and speed flew from the tree line like a silver bullet. Shit. Colt cranked the wheel as he slammed on the brakes and Will slid off the seat. The kid's shoulder slammed into the dash as the truck fishtailed. "Everyone hold on!" Colt screamed and braced for impact. Gloria scrambled for Will. Harvey tried to shield them both.
The pickup didn't stand a chance. 4,000 pounds slammed into the side of the truck. The bed crushed and crunched, and a roll of linens and water jugs flew over the windshield. The car didn't stop. It kept coming like a beast dredged up from the depths of hell, chewing up asphalt and truck parts as it forced the pickup off the side of the road. The tires hit the dirt, the rubber dug into the weeds, and the world turned on its ear. Colt fell against the driver's side door, and Gloria landed on top of him. Glass shattered and flew in all directions. Metal buckled all around them, but the truck didn't slow down. It flipped again, and Colt slammed into the roof. Pain lanced his shoulder. Glass pelted his face and arms. As the truck rolled down the slope of weeds and dirt, it picked up speed, tossing them about like balls in a bingo machine. Someone's hand smacked him in the face. A foot kicked him in the groin. They wouldn't survive the crash. He was going to die, right there on some no-name road in the woods of California, not because someone put a bullet in his head or he'd fought to the end and lost. No, a damn car accident. He survived the apocalypse only to be taken out like it was any other day of the week. As the truck rolled, it caught air, sailing up off the ground. Colt hit what used to be the windshield and kept going. He was free. Flying or falling, he couldn't tell which. Air hit him in the face with an accusatory slap. Trees and sky and the promise of the future blurred past him, saying goodbye. This was the end. He knew it. Gravity wrenched his body back to earth, and he hit the ground so hard he bounced. When he slammed into the dirt a second time, the world snapped to black.
Chapter 17. Danny. Highway 58, Northwest California, 5:15 p.m. The truck came to rest on one side in a thicket of young saplings, no more than 5 feet tall. Tree branches stuck through the gaping holes in the frame and the windshield. Smoke billowed from the engine. Broken bottles and sacks of smashed food littered the scene. Hunks of metal and scraps of plastic dotted the ground. A wet stain coated a shopping bag. Is that blood? Danny scrabbled down the embankment, slipping and sliding on loose rocks and shale as she rushed to the truck. Be alive, please. Be alive. She stumbled to a stop a foot from what remained of the truck bed. The tires were shredded. The tailgate had been sheared clean off. A dribble of gasoline leaked from the punctured tank. She swallowed and stepped closer.
Let me go first, Danny. It looks like the truck might catch fire.
Doug's voice stopped Danny still. In her rush to reach the accident, she'd forgotten he dealt with scenes like this every day. What happens if a fire starts? Doug glanced up as he picked his way through the wreckage.
Without a fireman's jacket or any gear, we hope to hell we can get everyone out, and we run.
He disappeared around the front of the truck, and Danny held her breath. A muffled curse carried on the wind.
Doug?
Melody called out from the road.
Are they alive? Can I help?
She picked her way around the wreckage and stopped within view of her brother before stumbling back. She landed on her butt on the asphalt as the color drained from her face.
Oh, no. Danny couldn't believe it. They weren't all dead. They couldn't be.
She rushed forward, heedless of the debris, or the risk, or Doug's harsh reproach.
This Colt.
The sight of a bloody arm, severed at the elbow joint, and lying a few feet from the cab, choked off her words. Danny covered her mouth. She recognized Gloria's wedding ring. From her vantage point, all she could see inside the truck's cab was blood. It splattered against the tan roof and dashboard,
and dripped over the branches, tangled in the windshield. So much freaking blood. Was Colt in there somewhere? Was his life mixing with that of the Wilkinses as it congealed in the cracked vinyl? She swallowed down a wave of nausea and regret. What would she do without Colt? Melody picked her way down the slope and pushed past Danny. We can't leave them in there. Doug, you have to get them out. You have to try to save... Oh, my God. Doug reached out and grabbed his sister as she sagged to the ground. That afternoon's lunch of oranges and canned beans tumbled from Melody's lips as she heaved into the weeds. She wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. Have you checked for a pulse? He shook his head.
There's no point, Mel. They're gone.
Please, Doug, just do it. Melody gripped her thighs as she heaved again, and Doug let her go. He eased around the side of the truck, bending the stunted trees to make a path. The truck groaned as he climbed aboard the mangled front fender and balanced on one leg as he straddled a hunk of hood. Smoke wafted around him from the engine area, but Doug pressed on, scaling the wreckage until he could grab a hold of the roof. With one hand gripping where the windshield used to be, and one holding fast to a bent side mirror, Doug slipped down into the cab. Danny waited, holding her breath, while Doug maneuvered in the tight space. In the time between watching the crash, and now, hope dwindled. The odds of anyone surviving were slim, non-existent maybe. There was nothing left of the truck bed. The cab had been crushed on all sides. The four of them would have to find a way to carry on. They would have to for...
I've got a pulse!
Doug's shout carried from inside the cab.
Harvey's alive!
Danny rushed up to the truck and found a foothold on the exposed underside. She hoisted herself up until her fingers found purchase on the doorframe. She cleared the side as Doug's head came into view.
What can I do?
He glanced up in surprise.
We have to get him out. But I don't have any gear. He could have a broken back or neck.
If we leave him, he could bleed out. Doug frowned.
Even if we get him free of the truck, we can't carry him all the way back to the Humvee.
We can use the hood of the Camaro.
Larkin's voice made Danny jump and she almost lost her footing. He traipsed out of the trees and stopped on the other side of the truck.
It flew off in the crash and is mostly one piece on the road.
Doug nodded.
That might work. Danny, can you and Melody get it?
She nodded and climbed down from her perch before grabbing Melody and heading for the road. Danny spotted the silver medal 100 feet down the pavement. She jogged to it with Melody on her heels. If Harvey was still alive, maybe Colt was too. Together, the two women dragged the hood down the embankment. It slipped and skidded and almost cut Danny's finger off, but they managed. As Doug and Larkin pulled an unconscious Harvey from the cab, Melody held the makeshift litter steady. Blood coated the side of Harvey's head, but he didn't appear to have any other injuries. The second Doug set Harvey down, she asked the question burning a hole in her heart.
Is Colt dead?
Doug shook his head.
I don't know. He's not in the truck.
Her eyes widened.
Are you sure?
Larkin stood up and wiped his bloody hands on his pants.
He's not on the road. He must have been thrown from the truck when it flipped. Driver's dead in the car. Or about to be.
Danny didn't wait another second. She climbed back up the embankment and began a search, scanning this way and that every step, searching for any sign of Colt. If he was out there, she would find him. Bits of metal and shards of glass glinted in the afternoon sun, and Danny sidestepped the biggest pieces. Debris covered the asphalt, but nothing showed signs of life. Every step brought her closer to the muscle car. It sat upright, crumbled in on itself but not destroyed. Danny approached with caution. Could Colt have been thrown back toward it? She didn't understand force or velocity or any of those physics terms she glossed over in class. As far as she knew, he could be anywhere, bleeding out while she searched in the wrong places. She eased up to the car,
Broken valves and tubes hissed as the car cooled. The driver's side door hung open 45 degrees. A boot was perched on the road. Danny froze. Was the driver still alive? She eased the rifle off her shoulder and checked the safety. They were running so low on ammo, a bullet was now worth more than food or water. Only fire if desperate. Stepping slowly enough not to make a sound, Danny cleared the driver's door. A man was slumped in the driver's seat, like Larkin said. Blood pooled on the asphalt by the door and dripped off a jagged wound in his arm. Plop, plop, plop. A beard coated his jaw and his neck, hiding pale skin and a sagging wattle. Danny stepped closer. She poked his shoulder with the barrel of her rifle. He groaned. Crap! All the time she'd stared at his body, she wished for a corpse. From the amount of blood spreading across the ground, she wouldn't have that long to wait. She eased closer. Empty passenger seat. Danny bent to see past the driver. What is that? She leaned closer. Luggage. Piles of duffels sat in the back seat, one on top of the other. Anything could be inside. Drugs, money, guns. Danny glanced at the driver. After the first groan, he hadn't made a sound. His chest barely moved. She examined the passenger side. That side of the car took the worst beating, crumbling in on itself from the impact with the truck. She couldn't get in any other way but past the driver. Stepping back, Danny glanced around. Where was Colt? Melody and Doug and Larkin still worked on Harvey on the side of the road, each one bending over the car's hood as they tried to keep him alive. She needed to get on with her search, but she couldn't leave this man here. What if he had something they could use? What if he woke up and got away? She turned back to face him. Melody would hate her for the thoughts running circles inside her brain, but she couldn't turn them off. He killed their friends. Whether it was an accident or intentional, Danny might never know. But the truth remained. Gloria and Will and maybe Colt were dead because of this man. She didn't need to agonize over the decision. Danny brought the rifle up and aimed at the man's head. No, she wouldn't waste a bullet. She lowered the gun and reached into her pocket for a hunting knife, one of the few things she'd managed to save from Colt's haul at the sporting goods store in Eugene. She'd kept it in her pocket ever since the run-in with Jarvis and Captain Ferguson. It had always been a weapon of last resort. Now it would be her first choice. Danny flicked out the blade, 4 inches long and sharpened to slice through a kill like hot butter. She eased up to the driver, sucked in a breath. This is the right call. I'm doing the right thing. She shut down her emotions and her nerves and forced her panic to subside. I can do this. One quick jab and twist, and even if the bastard woke up, he'd never make it. Danny exhaled and stepped closer.
What the hell are you doing? Trying to get yourself killed?
Danny spun around. Colt stood 10 feet behind her, using a tree branch as a crutch.
You're alive. Seems that way.
He winced instead of smiled.
But my knee is jacked up and my brain auditioned for a spot on a roller derby team.
Did your brain make it? He snorted and hobbled toward her.
Is he alive?
She nodded. For now. Colt pulled his Sig Sauer from his holster.
I'd step back.
Danny did as she was told, and watched as Colt pulled the trigger. The gunshot echoed down the street, and the second he lowered the gun, she rushed him. Her arms made it 3/4 of the way around his shoulders.
I thought you were dead.
Me too.
Colt hugged her back with one hand as Larkin stopped beside them. Danny pulled back and wiped at her face.
Anything I should know?
Colt tilted his head.
I'm alive. And that guy's dead.
Larkin nodded.
So are Gloria and Will. Harvey's hanging on, but I don't think for that much longer. Colt sagged. I saw it too damn late.
Danny spoke up. Did you see them tailing us?
What?
Danny glanced at Larkin. I don't know if it was the same car, but I caught a glimpse of one on a frontage road. It stayed with us for a while, then disappeared.
Colt shook his head. We were too far ahead of you. I didn't see it.
Do you think the same one?
Maybe.
Larkin clapped Colt on the back.
Either way, there was nothing you could do. It was barreling through the intersection. Had to be going 100, maybe more.
Colt nodded.
Still sucks.
You're damn straight.
Larkin stepped up and eased his shoulder under Colt's arm and took the tree branch.
Let's get you checked out. Melody's about done with Harvey.
Danny stood beside the car, hesitating.
Are you coming?
She glanced at the dead man. There's one thing I want to check out.
Be careful, Danny.
She watched Colt and Larkin shuffle away before turning back to the car. Holding her breath, she crawled over the man who now sported a bullet hole in the center of his forehead. He stank like beer and bodily fluid. With one hand on the seat, she reached out for the closest duffel. It didn't budge. She would have to crawl all the way into the back. Wedging herself between the dead man's thigh and the passenger seat, she managed to crawl in far enough to reach a zipper. Danny tugged, hoping for something they could use. The bag fell open, and her mouth followed suit.
Chapter 18. Colt. Highway 58, Northwest California, 7 p.m. Everything hurt. Colt tilted his head to the right and his brain sloshed like unset jello. He waited for the world to stop spinning. You're damn lucky to be alive. I scoured the pavement looking for body parts. Larkin plopped down on the asphalt next to Colt. Didn't expect to find you in one piece.
I bounced around inside the cab like a pinball until the windshield shattered. One of the rollovers must have thrown me out.
I'm surprised you're not impaled on a branch or head first in the middle of a tree trunk. Colt rubbed at his sore shoulder.
Feels like I did both, but I came to face down in a weedy ditch. If it had kept raining, I'd have drowned in the muck.
Larkin held up his hand. How many fingers?
Colt squinted. Too many to count.
You've got a concussion, that's for sure.
I've lost more brain cells than Mayweather last season.
Larkin chuckled. At least your sense of humor is still intact. Colt grew somber.
I tried to avoid the Camaro. It came on so fast, I couldn't...
He glanced at Melody's hunched-over form behind him, wincing as his back twisted.
I should have seen it.
He thought about Gloria and Will and their last moments on Earth, fear and pain and agony.
He didn't wish it on anyone, and now Harvey clung to life. Even if he did survive, once he found out his wife and grandson were dead...
Stop beating yourself up. We watched the whole thing. It was unavoidable.
I should have done more.
Unless one of those bullets you've stopped lately infused you with superpowers, you did all you could.
Colt rubbed his eyes. He knew Larkin spoke the truth, but it didn't matter. Gloria and Will would stay with him.
After surviving Jarvis and the house fire and an assault on the militia stronghold, to die in a car crash didn't seem fair.
How's Harvey? Barely breathing?
Larkin leaned back on his hands, his face grim. Even if we had antibiotics and the best medical care,
he wouldn't make it.
Not a chance.
Colt exhaled.
Does Melody know? Larkin glanced at the makeshift litter where Harvey still lay unconscious. If she does, she won't admit it.
Doug?
He knows. He's not an EMT, but... he's seen more car accidents than either of us.
How long?
A few days.
Larkin scraped a hand down his face.
But Harvey will be in agony. He's got a broken leg, ribs are smashed all to hell, and there's a nasty gash above his eye. Who knows about internal injuries? If he survives the night, the pain will only increase.
Colt nodded.
He'd seen his share of injuries and conflicts as a SEAL. The first few days were cruel in their optimism. Hope bloomed.